Greetings, brothers and sisters. My name is Mbambulu, and the name of this broadcast is The Only Real Solution. This broadcast, The Only Real Solution, is another did it of Mbambulu and Slide Over Productions. Hang on for a couple of minutes. I'll be right back. We'll be right back. going to be repeating a lot of themes on this broadcast, and I'm going to be referencing them over and over as the weeks and months pass. One of the themes will address our personal identity. Another theme will address our national identity. And a third theme will address sovereignty. And a fourth will address the issue of economic independence. To acquire economic independence, we have to take on the roles of Black power economists. We're going to be talking a lot about that. But let's start out with how we look at ourselves as individuals. One thing should be perfectly clear and beyond dispute. We are Black people. We are not dark-skinned white people. Look at yourself. Look at yourself and then look at John and Jane Doe. You are a Black person. But if John and Jane Doe have their way, they are going to convince you that you are better off if you look like them, act like them, and adopt the same values and priorities that are dear to them. A lot of Black individuals have already succumbed to that train of thought. But if you say that to them, they'll just about rip you to shreds. Putting John and Jane Doe into our business is how you ended up letting people call you Cutter, Negro, Afro-American, and now African-American. Neither one of us was ever either one of those things. But there was a wave of confusion, and somebody started calling us Cutter and Negro. We woke up a little bit and struck back by saying we weren't either of those, which was good. But soon, the good turned bad, because we started calling ourselves other names that misrepresented who we are. Names like Afro-American and African-American. Jane and John Doe got a little worried and big-eyed and didn't like that drift at all. But as soon as they realized nothing fundamental had changed, they were cool with it. The thing that flipped Jane and John Doe's lid during all of this name-changing adventure was that we had somehow taken what they had long promoted as a negative and turned it into a positive. We started calling ourselves that cursed term, Black, of all things, and we did it with pride. I am delighted to say I do not know a single Black person who is offended when someone calls her or him Black. That represented a big step forward for us because it was a step toward throwing John and Jane Doe out of our psychological mix. But names like African American put Jane and John Doe back into our mix because they have us again misrepresenting who we are. So each of us, one person at a time, has to look at herself or himself and get content. Get content with getting away from thinking of yourself as an African American, and get content with thinking of yourself as a new African. We are going to talk a lot about new Africans and new Africa on this show. You made a step forward by accepting your status as a Black person. That means you identify with Black people in all parts of the world. Generally speaking, I am a Black person and you are a Black person. I am an African and you are an African. But there are a number of different African nationalities on the African continent. And there are a number of African nationalities off of the African continent. Black people who presently live in the United States of America represent one of those groups of Black people, one of those African nationalities off of the African continent. In 1968, our nation of people was given a name, the Republic of New Africa, and each person a national identity, New African. I am a New African, and I'm proud of it. You are a new African too, but you have to feel comfortable calling yourself a new African before you can make it project the positive energy a national identity should project. An independent national identity is a powerful force that emits conscious and subliminal messages that make an impact on other people. Those messages play a big role in determining how others judge you and whether or not others respect you, and whether or not others view you as an equal. If you are an original, you don't want your status to be diluted or hyphenated. So take a look at yourself. Explore yourself thoroughly, touching every corner of your being, and realize that you can do a better job of identifying who you are and, as a consequence, have a greater impact on what others are likely to think about you. If you get to the point where you feel comfortable thinking of yourself as a new African, then you can say it loud, "I'm Black, new African, and proud," and the rest of the world will take note and give you the props you deserve. Think about it, and think about it, and think about it. For the next few hours, for the next few days, for the next few months, think about what you can do to make yourself feel comfortable when you refer to yourself as a new African. It doesn't mean you have to curtail the activities and services you have been providing to people in your neighborhood who need assistance. It doesn't mean you have to change what or where you worship. It doesn't mean you have to stop working with Black Lives Matter or abandon the Black Panther Party or whatever group or movement you are presently affiliated with. It doesn't even mean you have to become an active or responsible citizen of the Republic of New Africa. It simply means you take your identity seriously. That, without another word spoken, would affect the energy hierarchy in a way that boosts your individual status. Think about it. Think about it real good. Some of us have already made that psychological jump forward. We don't need anybody among us thinking that John and Jane Doe's graces are more rewarding than properly representing who we are. John and Jane Doe have no business being in our mix, and they have no business being in the mirror when you look at yourself. Think about it. Think about it. How you identify yourself is serious business. Really, this is serious business. If you want to project the image of a person who is to be respected, you have to take yourself seriously. You are an original. You are not somebody else's offshoot, appendage, or sidekick. So stop identifying yourself as an offshoot, appendage, or sidekick would do. Identifying yourself as a new African lets John and Jane Doe know that part of the bench they're occupying belongs to you, the legitimate owner. So they're going to have to slide over so you can occupy that physical, spiritual, and psychological space that belongs to you. And do it with pride, because originals have a ton of pride in who they are. You know, it seems like the more we try to hang out with John and Jane Doe, the dumber we get, the more erratic our family relations become, and the more debilitated our communities are. It's as if the glue that holds us together gets thinner and thinner, weaker and weaker, and less adequate at serving the purpose it used to serve. Trying to integrate with or allow others to assimilate us has cost us dearly. But some of us are so delighted that foreigners might let us ride with them or drive their car that they don't look at how much we are losing in the process. Today, the African Americans who live in the United States of America are worse off financially than new Africans were in the 1890s. The literacy of new Africans has decreased steadily for each decade since we started attending integrated schools and having teachers named Jane and John Doe. And since African Americans decided buying John and Jane Doe's leftover houses was a step in the right direction, Black communities have been crumbling and Black individuals have been preying on each other like never before, and with a viciousness that just does not compute unless you take some pernicious, sinister, and insidious factors into account. Negative subliminal messages that are part of the integration mix have been integration's real game changer, and we have been its victims. All of those images that are proof of Black progress are rejected by new Africans, but are just fine with a person who doesn't mind identifying himself or herself as an appendage. First, let me count the number of Blacks who became millionaires after being integrated, and then let me count the number of Blacks who are hopelessly destitute and with no community to fall back on. And to make matters worse, those Black millionaires, so-called millionaires, are really just as poor as doo-doo. They have been loaned the status of millionaire and will keep it just as long as they help Jane and John Doe make the rest of us think all of us can be millionaires too. But look at those Black millionaires. Where does their money come from? It comes from John and Jane Doe. That's where it comes from. And as soon as these successful Blacks stop serving John and Jane Doe's purpose, their revenue is going to slow down to a trickle, and their bank account is going to be blocked or reduced to zero because of so many legal bills they have to pay trying to keep from being put in jail. Originals don't want to identify themselves with doo-doo like that. Now, let me count the number of Black students who can go to white schools as a result of integration's graces. And then let me count the increase in the number of Blacks who can't even read a simple sentence. And the damage is worse still when the Black students who entered the white schools get comfortable with seeing John and Jane Doe when they look in the mirror. That's a whole lot of damage being heaped on Black people's psyche. And that damaged psyche goes back to the Black community to roost. There, it teams up with hopelessness and destitution and creates a dangerous mix within each Black individual. Many of those individuals explode, and when they explode, they are around other Black individuals and in Black neighborhoods or communities. So the damage the explosion generates cripples black people and black communities even more. What a contrast. The image of black progress that is so widely projected and the reality of increased deterioration that is ignored for all intents and purposes. An appendage would settle for that result. An original would not. Let me count the number of elected black politicians integration has made possible. And then let me count the number of them who push an agenda that goes beyond what John and Jane Doe are comfortable with. Anything that really is good for black people is not going to be good for John and Jane Doe, because John and Jane Doe are in possession of a whole lot of stuff that does not belong to them, and they don't want to give any of it back to its original owners. But black politicians are acceptable as long as they encourage new Africans to not think about color and not think we could be better off if we were on our own. So millions of blacks in hundreds of thousands of black communities submerge deeper and deeper into despair with the assistance of hundreds of black politicians who promote the phony image of black progress, because if they don't, it's back to the ghetto they go. Imagine a sword that has its handle in the middle and two long sharp blades at each end. At one end, the sword is stabbing the handful of so-called successful blacks in the stomach with the full knowledge of the successful black, making a mockery of the black progress story. And at the other end, the sword is stabbing millions of black people in the back, cowardly rendering them incapable of acting in their own interest, incapable of getting themselves out of the doo-doo hole they're in, and incapable of effectively lashing back at their enemies. That's the reality of accepting your status as an appendage, of identifying yourself as a less than complete participant. And let me count the number of blacks who were hanged from trees and roasted rotisserie style, the number of blacks who were incarcerated when the prosecutor knew they were innocent, the number of blacks who were raped and castrated, and the number of blacks just spent their whole life living like less than human beings. When you identify yourself as a new African, you realize that some foreigners are occupying your half of the bench, and they realize that they are going to have to slide over one way or the other. Immediately, you are viewed in a more positive light. Identifying yourself as a new African, it's not going to get any better than that. You know, I like the Haitian masses. I say the Haitian masses because there are some other Haitian elements that keep me shaking my head. Anyway, the Haitian masses, in my opinion, are the most complete representatives of African descendants outside of the African continent. Instead of trying to suck up to those foreigners who enslaved them, the Haitian masses made it clear that they didn't care squat about them. Instead of being ashamed of the way they talked because others were teasing them, the Haitian masses, unlike African Americans, took pride in how they talked and made the way they talked the official language of their country. And it was with good reason. Of the languages that I am at least slightly familiar with, Haitian Creole is easily the most efficient of them all. It is also the most democratic because it has not been used to diminish anyone's status based on her or his way of talking. That might change soon because some Haitians are beginning to standardize Creole, and that's too bad. But getting back to the subject, the Haitian masses are supreme representatives of Africa's children abroad because they don't surrender their values in order to acquire somebody else's material and spiritual bling bling. The Haitian masses value their DNA and make good use of their native intellect. New Africans in the United States can learn a lot from Haitians that can serve new Africans well. As a matter of fact, If we strain, when we look in our rearview mirror, we can see the Haitian masses proclaiming and celebrating their status as unadulterated, undiluted, and unhyphenated nationals. They do that in spite of the fact that John and Jane Doe countries have conspired to make their lives hell and strangle them economically. The fact that we can see them in our rearview mirror celebrating is proof of how far ahead of us those new Africans are in that particular respect. Give me a couple of minutes to switch lanes so I can touch on something else, and after that, I'm going to put this broadcast out to pasture. Aza Gwan, be right back.
When we were together,
you got a job now.
Well, well.
You got a job now.
Well, that's real nice. Leave your man and come and stay with me. I'll support you wholeheartedly. Just pay the bills and buy the food, and I'll keep you in a loving mood.
African sister, my new African brother, you are a powerful human being, but your power can be emphasized or diminished depending on how you contextualize it. You contextualize your power by identifying with or entering into alliances with other persons or groups of persons. If you place your power within a context that allows you 100% participation and rewards you with 100% returns, then you have a chance of maximizing your power and benefiting proportionately. However, if you place your power within a context that expects you to satisfy yourself with limited participation and provides you with a disproportionately small percentage of the rewards, then a lot of your power will serve somebody else's interests, not yours. Some of us are educated in such a way that we believe some individuals and collections of individuals have power while others do not. If you have been convinced that you do not have any power, then you should try to figure out who convinced you of that and understand that that person or group of persons does not have your best interest in mind. You need to learn how to live without those persons. Additionally, if a person or group of persons has a habit or history of abusing you, cheating you, or trying to belittle you, you need to learn how to live your life without them. Once you learn to live your life without them, they will not be able to use your power to help them push an agenda that does not serve your interests or only serves them minimally. John and Jane Doe have traditionally used violence to try to convince us New Africans that we don't have any power. Of course, many New Africans knew that wasn't true. Many New Africans realize that we have as much power as anyone else. But as long as we cave in to John and Jane Doe's context, they benefit from our power more than we do. But as soon as we define ourselves outside of John and Jane Doe's context, John and Jane Doe can't use our power to benefit them. And we can use our power to elevate ourselves and create a new normal for us. Something akin to a flight response makes it possible for human beings to see a silver lining in even the worst relationship. Seeing a silver lining makes it easier for a person to postpone taking a stand that could result in an uneasy, physical, or violent confrontation. And one can get so accustomed to that little silver lining that the person begins to define that abusive relationship in a way where that silver lining takes on more importance than all of the abuses that it accompanies. This appears to be what New Africans in the United States do when it comes to race relations. In spite of all the abuse New Africans have suffered and continue to suffer at the hands of John and Jane Doe, a lot of New Africans insist on coming up with a reason why we should continue to tolerate John and Jane Doe and seek a solution that does not rock their boat very much. That's extremely kind on the part of New Africans because John and Jane Doe are human beings too. It is generally assumed that they left the territory of Homo erectus en route to the territory of Homo sapiens, and it is generally accepted that they completed the journey, although there is little definitive proof of their arrival that has been documented. It's hard to fault a civilized being like a New African for giving John and Jane Doe the benefit of doubt. But sooner or later, John and Jane Doe have to prove that they deserve that benefit of doubt. Sooner has become a whole lot later than later, and our continued failure to abandon them raises questions about our own commitment to justice. John and Jane Doe continue to heap pain and suffering on innocent people throughout the world, and our failure to break loose from them causes all of our natural allies to think that we value identifying with Jane and John Doe more than anything else. For an African American, even though they will passionately deny it, standing with John and Jane Doe is more important than anything else. They'll talk about the silver lining, and they'll deny that fear has anything to do with their decision. If they insist, so be it. Let them squander away their power and be looked at as an accessory to Jane and John Doe's excesses. Fortunately, you don't have to suffer because of their weaknesses or be thought of scornfully by your brothers and sisters in other parts of the world. You can decide to cut ties with John and Jane Doe and the African Americans who identify with them. You can decide to contribute your power to something better. You can look in the mirror, get comfortable with not seeing a reflection of Jane and John Doe, and get comfortable identifying yourself as a new African. Too many African Americans tend to exhibit a version of John and Jane Doe's superiority complex in regard to Black people in other parts of the world. African Americans visit countries on the African continent, Cuba, Haiti, the Caribbean, etc., and project the attitude as if they have superior standards and a higher application capacity than the Blacks who live in those places. Sometimes they are so out of touch with themselves that they can't see that non-USA Blacks are ahead of Blacks in the United States in some critical regards. But USA Blacks are so limited in exposure and perspective that they let that fly past them without taking note of it. The fact of the matter is that African Americans have never taken on the responsibility of governing themselves and seem to not want any form of government where Jane and John Doe do not play prominent roles. That is the epitome of low self and racial esteem. They must think the bottom will collapse and everybody would tumble into misery if Jane and John Doe aren't there to keep everything functioning as it should. I'm going to talk a little bit now to make sure you know what the Republic of New Africa is. As we go from broadcast to broadcast, I will be more specific and provide more details, but this can serve as a good starting point. As new Africans in the United States of America, the country we are natural and full citizens of is the Republic of New Africa. The Republic of New Africa represents one of the nations of people who were attacked, kidnapped, imprisoned, and shipped out of Africa to other countries to do slave labor. As soon as this process started, new nations of Africans were formed but left unnamed. They were stripped of their African nationality, but immediately immersed into a different nationality that would evolve as they evolved. As they adjusted to their new reality, they learned to investigate the unfolding of their misfortune, give it historical and cultural form, and move forward within their authentic context. That national identity journey of Black people in the United States has been disjointed and filled with missteps. It started off with John and Jane Doe calling us whatever they wanted to. Then it moved to certain groups of Black individuals calling us more positive-sounding names, but still less than accurate ones. And finally, it was realized that an accurate representation of who we were depending on our national status. That status could not be within the context of those who had violated us and placed us in this awkward position. So in 1968, we declared our national status and gave it a name, the Republic of New Africa, and its citizens the name of New Africans. What principles were used to justify our new status? The founders of the Republic of New Africa, recognizing that we had been on the African continent, minding our own business and governing ourselves when we were so rudely interrupted, realized that we had not lost the right to govern ourselves simply because we had been attacked and uprooted by foreign invaders. Since that time, the major theme in the history of Black people in the Americas has been our quest to govern ourselves in the manner we were accustomed to doing on the African continent. Almost all of the most popular history books ignore this fact, but we should not be surprised by that at all. As the years of enslavement passed, there were thousands of slave revolts, and I doubt it if there were any that did not have a self-government objective. When the Blacks said they wanted freedom, it was equivalent to saying self-government and sovereignty. Then, in 1861, black people in the United States of America began to free themselves from slave labor on a massive scale. During an argument between white people in the North and white people in the South, black people did what neither of the whites wanted done and freed themselves. Make no mistake about that. Nobody frees black people except black people. After the Civil War ended, being free people, black people had four options according to internationally recognized and accepted standards. 1. If we wanted to, we could apply to be citizens of the United States of America. 2. If we so desired and if we could afford to, we could return to Africa, our ancient homeland, provided we could find a suitable space that would not interfere with other Africans who were already there. 3. If we wanted to and could afford to, we could immigrate to or relocate in another country if that country did not oppose us moving there. And 4. If we so desired, we had the right to establish an independent nation of our own right here on any land claimed by the United States, including the states that made up the Union. We had the right to do so because, 1, the United States government and United States citizens were responsible for forcefully removing us from our natural homeland, and 2, we had lived here long enough, worked here long enough, and fought here long enough to satisfy the status for nationhood requirements laid out by international law. Additionally, establishing a black nation here was our most logical choice because, 1, we had experienced self-government on this land before as Maroons, runaways, members of Native American tribes, and governments we established during the war between the states. 2, we could not trust our welfare to the people who had enslaved us, exploited us, and considered us their enemy. 3, we could not expect to get a fair deal from a government that was dominated by white people and white ideals. And 4, most black people had become accustomed to America and were unwilling or unable to return to Africa or immigrate to a foreign land. The United States government informed us of all of our options except our right to land owned by the United States. And, being ignorant of international law for the most part, black people tried to make the best of a bad situation. But some blacks were steadily investigating black history and the rights of oppressed people. They began discussing the right of black people to establish an independent government, and persons like Marcus Garvey and Noble Drew Ali took the idea to the common person. Then came Malcolm X, and he inspired a younger generation of blacks who formed political platforms around black people's right to land that is presently governed by the United States of America. One such group took the ideology to its logical conclusion, issued a Declaration of Independence of black people from the United States of America, created a new country by way of a constitution called the Code of Umoja, and gave that country the name the Republic of New Africa. With that, my new African sisters and brothers, I will bring this broadcast to an end. This broadcast is not meant solely for informational purposes. It is hoped you will be inspired to act. You have probably heard some well-known persons say knowledge is power, but that is a dangerously misleading statement, as the brilliant psychiatrist Frantz Fanon stated so clearly, knowledge has never saved anyone. It is what you do with knowledge that makes it either a powerful asset or a weak one. Make yourself powerful by putting knowledge of yourself in action. Begin by declaring your new African identity and practicing some of the steps I will be talking about in succeeding broadcasts of The Only Real Solution. Don't forget, you can contact me from my website at www.asetbooks.com. www.asetbooks.com. And there you can find much more information on this subject. I will be presenting the next broadcast next week, same day, same hour. Remember, we are black people. We are not dark-skinned white people. We need a nation of our own. Peace be with you, brothers and sisters, if you are willing to do what is necessary to get it.